Blog Talk Radio.
Say, Father, thank you.
When I was lonely and needed someone to hold me, you were beside me when my nights were cold and lonely. Oh, you never let me down when all would count on you to see me through. I'm telling you that you are the reason I'm alive and I'm still breathing.
For me, you gave your life and now my life.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. I pray that you have a blessed day. This is a Hodge to Hodge podcast. Nicole produces Ken and Ron Hodge. This is Nurse Carmen. And thank you for tuning in. And next, we will be having a conversation with the messenger, Ron Hodge.
Good evening, and thank you all for tuning in once again. We're going to continue from the series that we've been going on regarding the beginning. The world is the way it is because it could not be any other way and still exists in the gross realm of physicality. Earthquakes and hurricanes, floods and tornadoes, and events that you call natural disasters are but movements of the elements from one polarity to the other. The whole birth-death cycle is part of this movement. These are the rhythms of life. And everything in a gross reality is subject to them. Because life itself is a rhythm. It's a wave, a vibration, a pulsation at the very heart of the all that is. Illnesses and diseases are opposite of health and wellness and are made manifest in your reality at your behest. You cannot be ill without at some level causing yourself to be. And you can be well again in a moment by simply deciding to be. Deep personal disappointments are responses which are chosen. And worldwide calamities are the result of worldwide consciousness. Now, earlier the question was asked about why would God allow, but why would God choose these events? And that is, it is God's will and desire that they should occur. Yet, God does not will these things to into being. God merely observes you doing so. And God do nothing to stop them, because to do so would be to thwart your will. In turn, would deprive you of the God experience, which is the experience you and God have chosen together. So do not condemn, therefore, all the bad in the world. Rather, ask yourself, what about this have you judged bad? And what, if anything, you wish to do to change it? Inquire within rather than without, asking, what of now in the face of this calamity, what aspect of being do I choose to call forth? For all of life exists as a tool of your own creation, and all of it events merely presents themselves as opportunities for you to decide and be who you are. This is true for every soul. And so you see, there are no victims in the universe, only creators. The masters who have walked this planet all knew this. This is why no matter which master you might name, none imagined themselves to be victimized, though many were truly crucified. Each soul is a master. Though some do not remember their origin or their heritage, yet each creates the situation and the circumstances for its own highest purpose and its own quickest remembering. In each moment called now. Judge not then the karmic path walked by another. It be not success, nor pity failure, for you know not what is success or failure in the soul's reckoning. Call not a thing calamity, nor a joyous event, until you decide or witness how it is used. For is a death a calamity? If it saves the lives of thousands? And is a life a joyous event if it has caused nothing but grief? Yet even this should not be judged, but keep always your own counsel and allow others theirs. This does not mean ignore a call for help, nor the urging of your own soul to work towards the change of some circumstances or conditions. It does mean avoiding labels and judgments while you do whatever you do. Each circumstance is a gift, and in each experience is hidden a treasure. There once was a soul who knew itself to be a light. This was a new soul, and so anxious for experience, I am the light, it said. I am the light. Yet all the knowing of it and all the saying of it would be substituted for the experience of it. And in the realm from which this soul emerged, there was nothing but the light. Every soul was grand, every soul was magnificent, and every soul with the brilliance of God's awesome light. And so the little light in question was as a candle in the sun, in the midst of the grandest light, of which it was part. It could not see itself, nor experience itself as who and what it really is. Now it came to pass that this soul yearned and yearned to know itself. And so great was its yearning that one day said, do you know, little one, what you must do to satisfy this yearning of yours? Oh, what, God, what? I'll do anything, the little soul said. You must separate yourself from the rest of us. And then you must call upon yourself in the darkness. What is the darkness, oh, holy one, the little soul said? That which you are not, God replied, and the soul understood. And so this soul did remove itself from the all, going even unto another realm. And in this realm, the soul had the power to call into experience all sorts of darkness, and thus it did. Yet, In the midst of all the darkness, did it cry out, Father, Father, why hast thou forsaken me? Even as have you in your blackest times. Yet God has never forsaken you, but stands by you always, ready to remind you of who you really are. Ready, always ready to call you home. Therefore, be a light unto the darkness and curse it not. And forget not who you are in the moment of your encirclement, but that which you are not. But do you praise to, but I'm not sorry, but do you praise to the creation even as you seek to change it? And know that what you do in the time of your greatest trials can be your greatest triumph. For the experience you create is a statement of who you are and who you want to be. Now, I've told the story, the parable of the little soul and the son, so that you might better understand why the world is the way it is and how it can change in an instant. The moment everyone remembers the divine truth of their greatest reality. Now, there are those who say that life is a school. These things which you observe and experience in your life are for your learning. Now, I've addressed this before, and I'll tell you again. You came into this life with nothing to learn. You have only to demonstrate what you already know. In the demonstration of it, will you function out and create yourself anew through your experience? Thus do you justify life and give it purpose. Thus do you render it holy. So they said, am I saying that all the bad things that happen to us are things of our own choosing? I really mean that even the world's calamities and disasters are at some level created by us so that we can experience the opposite of who we are? And if so, isn't there some less painful to ourselves and to others to create opportunities for us to experience ourselves? Now, I'm going to take this one at a time here. No, not all the things which you call bad which happen to you are of your own choosing, not in the conscious sense, which you mean. They are of your own creation. You are always in the process of creating every moment, every minute, every day. How you can create, you will go into later. For now, just take my word for it. You are a big creation machine, and you are turning out a new manifestation literally as fast as you can think. Events are happening, circumstances, all are created out of consciousness. Individual consciousness is powerful enough, but can you imagine what kind of creative energy is unleashed whenever two or more are gathered in God's name? And mass consciousness, why, that is so powerful, it can create events and circumstances out of worldwide import and planetary consequences. So it would not be accurate to say, not in the way you mean it, that you are choosing these consequences. You are not choosing them any more than God is choosing them. You are observing them, deciding who you are with regard to them. Yet, there are no victims in the world and no villains, and neither are you a victim of the choices of others. At some level, you have all created that which you say you detest, and having created it, you have chosen it. This is an advanced level of thinking, and it is one which all masters reach sooner or later. For it is only when you can accept responsibility of all of it that you can achieve the power to change part of it. So long as you entertain the notion that there is something or someone else out there doing it to you, you disempower yourself to do anything about it. Only when you say, I did this, can you find the power to change it? It's much easier to change what you are doing than to change what others is doing. The first step in changing anything is to know and accept that you have chosen it to be what it is. If you can't accept this on a personal level, agree to it through your understanding that we are all one, seek then to create change not because a thing is wrong, but because it no longer makes an accurate statement of who you are. There is only one reason to do anything as a statement to the universe of who you are. Used in this way, life becomes self-creative. You use life to create yourself as who you are and who you always wanted to be. There is also one reason to undo anything, because it no longer a statement of who you want to be. It does not reflect you. It does not represent you. That is, it does not represent you. If you wish to be accurately represented, you must work to change anything in your life which does not fit into the picture of you and that you wish to project into eternity. In the largest sense, all the bad things that happen are of your choosing. The mistakes is not in choosing them, but in calling them bad. For in calling them bad, you call yourself bad since you created them. This label you cannot accept. So rather than label yourself, you disown your own creation. It is this intellectual and spiritual dishonesty which lets you accept a world in which conditions are as they are. If you had to accept or even felt a deep inner sense of personal responsibility for the world, it would be a far different place. This would certainly be true if everyone felt responsible. That is, so paternally observant is that makes it so utterly painful and so prognostically ironic. The world's natural calamities and disasters, its tornadoes and hurricanes, volcanoes and floods, its physical turmoil, are not created by you specifically. What is created by you is the degree to which these events touch your life. Events occur in the universe with no stretch of the imagination can claim you or create it. These events are created by the combined consciousness of man, all of the world. So creating together produces these experiences. What each of you do individually is move through them, deciding what, if anything, they mean to you and who and what they are in relationship to them. Thus, you create collectively and individually the life and times you are experiencing for the sole purpose of evolving. You ask if there is a less painful way to undergo this process, and the answer is yes. Yet nothing in your outward experience will have changed. The way to reduce the pain which you associate with earthly experiences and events, both yours and those of others, is to change the way you behold them. You cannot change the outer event, for that has been created by the lot of us, and you are not growing enough in your consciousness to alter individually that which has been created collectively. So you must change the inner experience. This is the road to mastery and living. Nothing is painful in and of itself. Pain is a result of wrong thought. It is an error in thinking. A master can disappear the most grievous pains, and this way the master heals. Pain results from a judgment you have made about a thing. Remove the judgment and the pain disappears. Judgment is often the previous experience. Your idea about a thing derives from a prior idea about that thing. Your prior idea results from a still prior idea, and that idea from another, and so forth, like building blocks, until you get all the way back in the hall of mirrors of what I call first thought. All thought is creative, and no thought is more powerful than original thought. That is why this is sometimes also called original sin. Original sin is when you first thought about a thing is an error. That error is compounded many times over when you have a second or third thought about a thing. It is the job of the Holy Spirit to inspire you to understanding, which can free you from your mistake. Now, so am I saying that I shouldn't feel bad about the starving children of Africa, the violence and injustice in America? There are no shoulds or shouldn'ts in God's world. Do you do what you want to do? Do what reflects you, what represents you as a grander version of yourself. If you want to feel bad, feel bad. But not, and neither condemn. For you know not why a thing occurs, nor to what end. And remember you this, that which you condemn will condemn you, and that which you judge will one day become. Rather seek to change those things or support others who are changing those things, which no longer reflect your highest sense of who you are. Yes, bless all, for all is the creation of God. Through life living, and this is the highest creation. So you said, so you heard me say, and you want to question it. Did I say there's no should or should nots in God's world? And that is correct. Well, how can that be? If there are none in your world, why would there be? Indeed, where? It's in your imagination. Then those. But those who have taught me all about the rights and wrong, the do's and don'ts, the shoulds and shouldn't, told me all these rules were laid down by God. Then those who taught you were wrong. God has never set down a right or wrong, a do or a don't. To do so would to strip you completely of your greatest gift, the opportunity to do as you please and experience the results of that, the chance to create yourself anew in the image and likeness of who you really are, the space to produce a reality of a higher and higher you based on your grandest idea of what it is of which you are capable. To say something, a thought, an action is wrong would be as much as to tell you not to do it. To tell you not to do it would be to prohibit you. To prohibit you would be to restrict you. You would be to deny the reality of who you really are, as well as the opportunity for you to create and experience the truth. There are those who say that God has given you free will, yet these same people claim that if you do not obey God, God will send you to hell. What kind of free will is that? Does this not make a mockery of God? To say nothing of any sort of true relationship between you and God? Okay, well, now we're getting into another area, and I want to discuss, and that's the whole business about heaven and hell. From what I'm gathering here, there's no such thing as hell. There is hell, but it is not what you think, and you do not experience it for the reasons you have been given. Well, what is hell? It is the experience of the worst possible outcome of your choices, decisions, and creations. It is the natural consequences of any thought which denies God or say no to who you are in relationship to God. It is the pain you suffer through. through wrong thinking. Yet even the term wrong thinking is a misnomer, because there is no such thing as that which is wrong. Hell is the opposite of joy. It is unfulfillment. It is knowing who and what you are and failing to experience that. It is being less. That is hell, and there is none greater for your soul. But hell does not exist as this place you have fantasized, where you burn in some everlasting fire or exist in some state of everlasting torment. For what purpose would God have in that? Even if God did hold the extraordinary ungodly thought that you do not deserve heaven, why would God have a need to seek some kind of revenge or punishment for your failing? Wouldn't it be a simple matter for God to just dispose of you? The vengeful part of God would require that God subject you to eternal suffering of a type and at a level beyond description. If you answer the need for justice, would not a simple denial of communion with God be in heaven serve the ends of justice? Is the unending infliction of pain also required? I tell you, there is no such experience after death as you have constructed in your fear-based theology. Yet there is an experience of the soul so unhappy, so incomplete, so less than whole, so separate from God's greatest joy, that to your soul this would be hell. But I tell you, I did not send you there, nor do God cause this experience to be visited upon you. You yourself created the experience whenever and however you separate yourself from your own highest thought about you. You yourself created the experience whenever you deny yourself, whenever you reject who and what you really are. Yet even this experience is not eternal. It cannot be. For it is not God's plan that you shall be separated from God forever and ever. Indeed, such a thing is an impossibility. For to achieve such an event, not only would you have to deny who you are, God would have to as well. And God would never do that. And so as long as one of us holds the truth about you shall prevail. But if there is no hell, does that mean I can do what I want, act as I wish, commit any act without fear of retribution? Is it fear that you need in order to be, do, and have what is instinctively right? Must you be threatened in order to be good? And what is being good? Who gets to have the final say about that? Who sets the guidelines? Who makes the rules? I tell you this, you are your own rule maker. You set the guidelines, and you decide how well you have done, how well you are doing, for you are the ones who have decided who and what you really are and who you want to be, and you are the only one who can assess how well you're doing. No one else will judge you ever, for why and how could God judge God's own creation and call it bad? If God wanted you to be and do anything perfectly, God would have left you in the state of total perfection whence you came. The whole point of the process was for you to discover yourself, create yourself as you truly are and as you truly wish to be. Yet you could not be that unless you also had a choice to be something else. Unless you had a choice to be something. Now, it's important for us to understand what was said here tonight, because if we can get into it, we can begin to understand just who we are. We can take responsibility for all the things that are going on around us. Excuse me. And start creating our life the way we want it to be. But we're worried about everything else, and we're forgetting to create our own life. I love you all. I pray that something is moving on the inside to help you understand just who you are and who it is that you want to be. Until Sunday night, I pray that you have a blessed weekend, and go within, because if you don't go within, you will go without. I love you all very much. Have a blessed evening.
Amen.
Good night, everyone.
Love you, too. Thank you.